are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
That I saw like 20 minutes of opening day today, and it was the Christian Betancourt disaster debut.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mr. Alex Chamberlain of, you name it, pretty much. Rotographs, Baseball Prospectus, Roto Baller, he's an FSWA winner. I'm reading this, I hope this is all true because I'm reading this off your Twitter handle. Alex, how are you doing?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Like the Indians Rangers game was today, and or whether it's been not fun, like the Padres Dodgers. I've watched a little bit of everything. It's fun drawing all these conclusions from one game sample size. So
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast, episode 247. The first episode of the 2017 regular season for the MLB. And with me tonight is Mr. Matt Thompson. Matt, how is opening day for you?
Man, this is great, man. I had a little bit of freedom with my schedule, so I made sure I didn't have to work today. I've been watching little bits of every game, whether it's been fun, like the Indians Rangers game was today, and or whether it's been not fun, like the Padres Dodgers. I've watched a little bit of everything. It's fun drawing all these conclusions from one game sample size. So
I would hope nobody's drawing any type of conclusions from one
pitch. I was kidding about that. Yeah.
But no, there is always going to be those people out there that are on alert based on one start or whatever. I know a lot of people yesterday with the Yankees and Rays game, which is obviously what I was more excited about. They were all off of the Masahiro Tanaka bandwagon just based off one bad start, and I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. So lot of people on Twitter are obviously saying, like, oh, buy low, and there is no buy low window because it's one start. So
that Carlos Martinez bandwagon's getting pretty full after one start too. So
he looked pretty good. Both of our teams won yesterday. How about that? And then yeah. Justin, who is not with us tonight due to some personal matters, his team lost, which, you know, is kind of fitting, obviously.
It's always nice to walk off against your rival on opening day. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. But we have a great guest tonight on this night of opening day, and that is Mr. Alex Chamberlain of, you name it, pretty much. Rotographs, Baseball Prospectus, Roto Baller. He's an FSWA winner. I'm reading this. I hope this is all true because I'm reading this off your Twitter handle. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm good. It is true. I'm good. Yeah, I was just telling you guys off the air that I saw like 20 minutes of opening day today, and it was the Christian Betancourt disaster debut. So that was my exposure to. Yeah, I really got the central thesis of opening day, but I didn't get to see any of the dongs or any of the star pitching performances. So that'll be later tonight.
Just a off-topic question here, because I would like to look it up, but I don't want to yet. How many straight opening days has Bryce Harper homered? Because I feel like this has to be like his fourth or five. Yeah.
They said five. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw five either. Yeah. I guess it was today. Yeah. Someone said five. I can't even believe that, actually.
It's crazy, impressive. Yeah. It's really impressive. Yeah. I don't know how he continued. I don't know why people just don't intentionally walk him on opening day and then just don't intentionally walk him the rest of the season. I did see that actually come to a full effect in the Kansas City game on my way home. I was kind of streaming any baseball I could find, and at the moment it was 1-1 between the Twins and the Royals, and as that was going on, I finally saw the first intentional walk with only one pitch. And I mean this is probably a whole bigger debate, but it's fine for me. Like, is it really necessary? I don't think so, and I think a lot of the older baseball heads are kind of upset about it a bit, because I know once out of every 1,000 times that there's an intentional walk, somebody throws it over the guy's head. But I did see it in action today, and I didn't, you know, it was fine.
Here's a trivia question for you, Mike. Who was the very first intentional walk that didn't have to throw pitches?
I have no idea. Alex probably has an idea.
I saw the tweet, but I don't remember now.
It was Yadier Molina on Sunday Night Baseball. Yeah. Yep. Joe Maddon intentionally walked Molina to get to Piscotty.
I should have guessed that based on.
No, I just happened to watch the game, and they made a big deal out of it on ESPN because it was the first time. So.
Well, we definitely have some things to talk about tonight. Alex, why don't you give the listeners just a few plugs for yourself, where you can be reached on Twitter, what you're up to nowadays, and just hype yourself up a bit.
All right. I am the best. That's the start of the hype.
That's it. All right. No, so let's talk about it.
I'm kidding. My Twitter handle is Dolph Haldhagen, which I won't even spell. You can just try to find me on Twitter, and if you find me, then congratulations. I'm on Rotographs, Baseball Prospectus, Roto Baller. When I get the chance, I'm kind of spreading myself a little bit thin, but I try to write once a week, at least at the first two, and trying to figure out something for the third. Usually just like writing about whatever comes to mind or like whatever kind of research I'm doing at the time. I try to find not necessarily like weird oddities the way that like a Jeff Sullivan writer at Fangraphs might do, like honing in like one pitch from one at bat from one game. It's not quite like that, but I do like player profiles. I like trying to find different angles on guys that we don't really see, and I also like tackling biases, so I'm like the Debbie Downer guy, like on a hype train. I'll be like, no, well, you know, we've seen something like this happen before, you know, so maybe we shouldn't get too excited. Like, I'm always that guy. So,
well, I know we're joking around a lot, but dead serious, I think that you're one of the best writers out there, and I'm really excited to have you on. We've had you on before.
Agreed.
And I think it went really well.
That is very high praise.
It's funny too. It's really, it means a lot to us that you come on, because I mean, the state that you live in, I'm sure there's plenty of other things that you could be doing out. Decided to join us for this.
Did we already talk about this? I'm living in Hawaii now. I don't know if that was said on air. Yeah,
I don't think it was. But
instead of, I was in Portland, Oregon for 5 years, and I'm in Hawaii. And the irony is that I like don't know how to surf or like skateboard. I'm a horrific swimmer. So I'm basically like the worst person, like a worst candidate to have moved to Hawaii.
Yeah, let's go move to an island. Like tan or something, or
no, I'm like the whitest I've ever been. I swear to God.
So how did this result in being in Hawaii? Like, how's that happen? A job?
My fiance is originally from Hawaii, and she's finishing up her like postdoc stuff here. I'm working from home. I actually am able to telecommute, so I just brought my job to Hawaii. But basically what that means is I don't ever leave the house. So I'm just like confined to my office and then my living room. Like,
oh man. So you probably have to get up real early your time every day to work because the time change and stuff, right? Like,
yeah, I get up at like 5.
Yeah. I figured. Yeah. That's one downside, but you live in Hawaii, so I don't feel bad for you.
Yeah. I can't complain. I'm not going to complain.
That sounds horrific. 5 in the morning. All right. So Let's first and foremost, please continue to rate and review the show. We actually, later on, will be announcing the winner of a t-shirt from us. We will announce the Twitter, the person that left a awesome rate and review for us that will be winning a t-shirt from Friends with Fantasy Benefits. So that's pretty awesome. We'll do something else later as well. But yes, please continue to give us 5 stars and help us out in that area. It really helps us out. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. You can also reach Matt at MDTomp. FWFB. So let's get this started. A few kind of news things that have happened recently. Obviously, Blake Treinen has been announced as the closer for the Washington Nationals, and he actually looked fairly good today. And what I saw, at least, I didn't see the whole game, but I did watch, you know, his inning. He had a couple strikeouts in there. But Alex, what are you thinking about? First off, with Blake Treinen, do you think that he deserves to have this role over Sean Kelly or Kota Glover? And second, do you think that he can sustain the role for the entire season?
I don't really care about the deserve thing. I mean, I guess I would have preferred to see Sean Kelly in that role. I think Sean Kelly, like in like a very broad sense, deserved to be in that role. I think Blake can do the job. His walk rate freaks me out, and I think the ground rate. I think his pitches are awesome, and I actually like watching him pitch. But if you're gonna walk a guy once every 2 times you go out to save a game, you're gonna have your team on edge quite often, and I don't know if he's gonna make it out unscathed. So I think eventually Sean Kelly takes over, or maybe even quickly. But with that said, as I waffle on this position, I think he has the capability to keep the role. I just don't. I think it would be like one of those like Fernando Rodney kind of moments where he just like mediocrely makes it through an entire season.
But, yeah.
You know, You know what I mean? Like he's not going to do great. He could do pretty well, but he just hasn't been like particularly effective. I don't think he's interesting, but not like the greatest option.
The thing is, though, I'd say 100% of people that drafted Trinan got him for absolutely nothing. So at this point, even if he holds the role for 3 months of the year, 2 months of the year, and then he's a holds guy the rest of the way, I think his underlying metrics are good enough for him to be a quality reliever for you the rest of the year, and you already are getting what you paid for. I agree. I mean, he's more of a two-pitch guy. He's kind of like a sinker, fastball slash slider guy, but he has great velocity, great ground ball rate. The walks are pretty much the only glaring problem with him. And if he can get that in check a little bit, then I think that there might be some longevity to him holding the role. But I also agree, the question of, did he deserve the role? It doesn't matter if he deserved it. He has the role in the end. I'm a very much a Sean Kelly believer. I like him a lot, and I would definitely not be getting rid of him at this point. But based on what Trinan's arsenal is, and based on the fact that he has the role right now, I think he's not somebody that you can get rid of, at least at this point, and probably not for any time in the foreseeable future, because he's going to at least hold a high leverage role for them. Matt, what do you think about Blake Trinan? I know that you have had his back essentially the last month or two. What do you think about him for the rest of this year?
I like him a lot. I think he offers a relative level of safety that a lot of pitchers don't. I mean, Saris has brought this up a lot. He's got that super sinker, kind of like Zach Britton and Sam Dyson do, same velocity, pretty much same break and everything. So that instantly, he's got a level of safety because he can just throw that pitch and get those ground balls. The infield defense of Washington should be decent. I don't see why it wouldn't be. So getting the ground balls is going to help him there. He doesn't give up home runs, which is the best thing a reliever can do. He has a decent enough strikeout rate that it's not going to kill you. I mean, it's about one an inning. I mean, Sean Kelly, to put it in perspective, is like 12.7 Ks per nine, which is a ridiculous number. But he also gave up 1.4 homers per nine last year in Washington. And I think that's kind of scary. And he's very slider heavy. He's been injured in the past. Trinan's interesting story. He had a thumb injury when he was a kid, and I guess that's what allows him to grip the ball a little differently and throw that killer sinker. But I don't see any reason why he can't hold the role all season. I mean, like I said, with that one pitch being so dominant, just continue to throw it until someone figures it out, which they haven't to this point. Yeah, no platoon split for Trinan also, which is a good thing to note. I mean, yeah, like Alex touched on, he does walk too many guys to be absolutely comfortable with him. But I don't see any reason he can't stick with this job. And I mean, this is a big job for fantasy because, I mean, Washington's got one of the best teams in the league. Scherzer and Strasburg in the games they don't finish are going to hand it off to, Trinan for the save. And you're looking at potential 35, 40 saves here if you can hold the job. So it's very relevant for fantasy purposes. And if you can roster both him and Kelly, I would do it if you can. But if you obviously like Trinan is the guy to own now with the job, so no reason why he can't hold it, I don't think.
What size league do you have to be in to hold on to Kota Glover?
I don't think Dusty's going to give him the job, man. I really don't. I would say 20 team league maybe. And if the league counts holds, I mean, you might have some value now. But I mean, I think Glover is at least third in the pecking order. So I think you can cut him in all 15, 12 teamers.
How about you, Alex? Do you think that Glover is relevant in any way?
No, I don't. I agree with Matt. I don't know what all that noise was in spring training, and it was all pretty bizarre to begin with. So now that it's put to rest, I think we can move on. I think we all know, and if you don't already know, I mean, Kota Glover is the closer of the future, so to speak, in Washington, but he's not the closer of the present, and I don't think he's going to see really any opportunities in 2017 unless there's like a trade, and then like Trinan or Kelly are working on like 3 days straight and they need a breather, so it's gonna be one of those kinds of things. I'd put the over under at like three saves for Glover.
I never bought into the Glover hype. I mean, Dusty Baker is not going to give that job to a rookie. I think that's a fair thing we can establish. I was kind
of all people to say that, right? I was really surprised to hear that Dusty Baker is going to do that. Now it makes sense that he didn't
I was kind of half kidding all offseason, but I was kind of joking that Joe Nathan might get that job. But I think Dusty wanted to give it to him, but he just couldn't justify it. But
just Dusty being Dusty.
Yeah, roger that.
This is the way it always goes. Let's talk about another just continually bizarre situation with the Mets, and that is the fact that, you know, obviously Steven Matz once again got injured. He has another elbow problem. This is also coming off of elbow problems last year, shoulder problems. He's going to miss, you know, I don't know how long he's going to miss, but probably a few weeks. And we have Zach Wheeler kind of coming back from the dead here, and he's going to be starting the fourth game of the season. I'll throw it to you this time, Matt, to start off with. Do you believe in Zach Wheeler in any way, shape, or form? I think a lot of people are hanging their hats on one good spring outing and then are kind of just crossing their fingers that everything's going to work out. Where are you at with Zach Wheeler?
I mean, believe in him is, yeah, but I don't think to what level is, I guess, the question I'm asking. I don't think he's ever anything more than a mid-rotation guy for the Mets, despite the stuff that he has. So for fantasy upside, I don't think he's any more than an SP 4 or 5. Plus the injury concerns baked in. I mean, yeah, it was Tommy John, but you know how that goes. There's a certain window you can come back from that. He gets the velocity back up to 95, but I mean, he's all kind of inconsistent. He does, his walk rates have consistently been high since he turned pro, since he got traded from the Giants to the Mets. I think the most notable thing about him is he was traded for Carlos Beltran, and I think that kind of rises his stock up a little bit. I mean, as it should, but I think he's clearly worse. I'd prefer like Gesellman over him, no doubt. I'm kind of, the velocity, like I said, came back. I don't think the upside's all that high. I think he's got a relatively high floor because he's on a good team if he can stay healthy. But I think he's on a shorter leash than anyone else in that rotation. But it might not matter because if they all get hurt like Matt's doing, he's going to stay in the rotation all year. But I like Wheeler, but I'm not nearly as high as anyone else.
Do you think that there's an opportunity to buy low here on Steven Matz, Alex? Or do you think that Zach Wheeler can pitch a meaningful amount of innings? Or maybe both of them can be serviceable for fantasy?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a buy low on Matz. I mean, there's, yeah, like, okay, so like Matt said, there's obviously some injury concerns there. He has demonstrated himself to be very effective when he's healthy. And right, obviously there's a big caveat. But I think if Wheeler doesn't show not only a good deal of success here, but also a good deal of growth from what we've seen from him, he's not going to stay in the rotation when Matz comes back, or if, maybe not when, but if. I don't also like Wheeler that much. I don't like the walks. It really limits his upside, so to speak. I think he's always, I'm just going to repeat what Matt said, because I think he's always going to be this guy who has like this fading prospect glow, but he's never going to live up to the hype that we all remembered. And Matz, if he gets healthy, I think can be excellent. So I do think it's a good buy low. I mean, it's a pretty, I think for most people, it's going to be a pretty low risk gamble to acquire Matz to see if he eventually gets healthy and can pitch the way he's pitched before. So I don't really like using that term buy low, but I do think this is a legitimate opportunity in this case.
Well, it looks like he's not going to be back until the beginning of May, which is a problem, but
I would take the over on that. I don't even trust that news. I would say June. I would say June.
You guys are killing me, man. My worst dynasty trade ever made, I acquired Steven Matz in. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's panning out to be that way. I traded David Dahl for Matz, and I don't like that.
Well, both of them are injured.
Well, maybe they'll both return at the same time.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'm very, very high on Matz, and I think that there's certainly an opportunity to get him at a lower cost. It's just a matter of health. I think everybody knows that at this point, but I'm willing to take a shot on him if you can get him for, you know, maybe a lower cost guy. I'm trying to think of, you know, an arm that you can possibly do that for right now at this moment. But either way, I think that there's an opportunity to get him. He has been just nothing short of stellar whenever he throws. But the problem is, you know, 130 innings last year. If he ended up throwing 170 innings, I think he would have been a top 15 starter last season. So it just kind of puts it in perspective. If you end up, especially in shallower formats, if you get 120 innings out of him this year, then I think during those starts, he's going to be a top 20, 25 starter for your team, and you're going to be getting him at a much lower cost. Zach Wheeler, I'm just not in on, especially him having such ups and downs in his recovery from Tommy John. I think that this is just a very short-term, a short-term thing for the Mets themselves, trying to get somebody to fill in until somebody like Seth Lugo comes back, or whichever other route they want to go. But I think
Lugo.
yeah, Wheeler's on a very, very short leash, in my opinion. And he's not out of the woods yet in terms of health. I think that there's easily a possibility that he gets hurt once again and is shut down for a while at any moment in time. So I'm not buying on Wheeler at all.
For Steven Matz, you kind of have to do the Rich Hill plan for redraft, right?
Just kind of. They're assume. Very, very similar.
Yeah, I was actually going to make that comp. Yeah, because, right, the 15 starts that he'll give you are going to be extraordinary, but then the other 15 won't happen because he will be on the disabled
list.
Hasn't
this been something with Matz that has plagued him forever now, like since college or high school? Like, he's been injured like every season or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think there's I think it's a pretty valid concern at this point, like a well-established concern. Yeah,
he might be the next guy to convert to that super reliever role to keep him healthy. You never know.
Here's a nice either or. Would you take David Price or Steven Matz this season? I know I'd be taking Matz, but I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I still think I'd take Matz.
I think I'd take Matz too. Yeah.
I think ability wise, they're a lot closer than people might think they are, anyways. And plus the National League boost. And
what if you could trade Felix Hernandez, who actually was pulled from a start tonight with a groin pull? Go figure. Would you take Felix Hernandez or Matz? Me, I'm going Matz.
It depends on league size there. If I'm in a shallow league, I'll take Matz because I think the 12-15 start burst he gives me is going to be better than Hernandez grinding it out for 35 or 30 starts. But obviously, deeper format, I'll take Hernandez because I think he's going to pitch. But shorter format for sure. A smaller format, give me Matz.
Yeah, I think I got to take Matz too. I don't even think I would have thought twice about it. I'm just checking Felix's page just to be sure, but I don't even think I feel comfortable. I didn't draft Felix in any leagues this year.
I'm kind of just necessarily against him either. I just wasn't pro Felix either. I was kind of
30 going on 55, so
he left a couple hangers out there tonight, and Springer of all people, you know, knocked a homer the first at bat of Houston's season. So way, let's
six strikeouts though.
Yeah, he did get some strikeouts, which is nice. I do want to talk about something that's very interesting to me, and honestly, it probably isn't that interesting at this point. Greg Holland got the first save chance for the Rockies today. He was sitting about 94. I saw him touch 95 a couple times, but I don't think he's all the way back, and I don't think he'll ever be the pitcher of 2013. But I do think that he has the role, and I think it's pretty established at this point. Mm-hmm. Unless you I think that the Rockies are going to be sneaky competitive this year. So I think that you're looking at a guy that could potentially get 30 plus saves. I'm very, very upset about it because I am a very big Adam Ottavino fan. But, well, you know, Alex, I'll throw this to you. What do you think about holding on to Ottavino at this point? You know, since you've seen somebody like Holland get a save chance already at on opening day and look pretty good.
That's tough. Yeah, I like Ottavino a lot too. I think he's sneaky good. I don't think people really appreciate it, and I think he really gets dismissed quickly because he plays in Colorado. But he has he's kind of a 60-70% ground ball guy. He has I can't remember which pitch it is, but he has a pitch that gets ground balls like 90% of the time. It's bonkers, and so I would love to see that, you know, actually play up in a meaningful role. I don't think Holland, well, it's so hard to say. It's so hard to say. I mean, you can't predict the future. I would not trust Holland to either stay healthy or to do an admirable job in the role this year. I mean, even in tonight's, game appearance, geez, no strikeouts, one walk. Yeah, no strikeouts, one walk. He got a ground ball. That's
he
nice.
Was leaving pitches over the middle of the plate too. It wasn't like Eric Thames like had a pitch piped down the middle of the plate and he popped it up. Like he just missed it, but it didn't look good.
Yeah, and I'm not totally sold. And I can see why people get really excited. And obviously, you need to own him if he's going to be getting the saves chances. And I doubt they're going to go by a committee or anything. But I do not. Yeah, there's no way I expect the Greg Holland of old. It probably will be like a somewhere in between 2014 and 2015, which is the really easy answer. But I think there's going to be, I think it's going to be pretty bumpy, honestly.
Worth noting, he was pretty bad in 2015, minus the saves. I mean, 5.2 walks per nine in 2015.
Well, that's when
he was awful. I'm assuming that was injury, right?
Yeah, those were precursors to him getting Tommy John.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is another argument to come up with, though, is if Ottavino is the better pitcher, which I think we are agreeing he is, then why would the Rockies put you know, Ottavino in an easier inning, essentially, in the ninth when they can use him in higher leverage situations earlier in the game, which I think is a question to ask about a lot of relievers nowadays that possibly profile better for, you know, higher leverage innings and just don't get used in the ninth inning for saves, which would obviously benefit fantasy teams.
I think Bud Black, he's the manager of the Rockies. I think he did some similar things with the Padres. I think he had, when he was there, I think he had some of his better relievers pitching the seventh or eighth, and I think the closer was the ninth inning. I think he did something similar there. I'm not sure. I'd have to go and look that up. But maybe they're just playing or pandering to the analytic crowd. Who knows?
Well, at least for me, I'm holding on to Ottavino. And if I'm holding on to him for 4 months or 5 months, hoping that he gets the ninth inning role, then so be it. But I think he's going to offer value for you in any size league, except for like 10 teamers, even while getting holds, because his stuff is that good. And I just think that he's going to be a good enough guy to be able to do that for you.
I agree with that. I mean, it's worth noting Ottavino, like many relievers, he's a former a first-round draft pick. He's a starter and with the Cardinals organization. They cut him, and he goes to Colorado, pitches out of the bullpen. Obviously, something clicked there. I think with Greg Holland coming off injury, I doubt Holland pitches back-to-back days. It might be maybe till the second half of the year where they even feel comfortable doing that. But we talked about Holland on this podcast, and I brought up the contract he signed. You could tell he was a closer. He's making too much money to not be, and that's unfortunately what happened, because I do think Ottavino is a better pitcher. Obviously, I think everybody does. But, yeah, I would hold Ottavino, too. I agree with you, Mike. I think 12 to 15 team leagues, I think you can – obviously, the larger league, the easier to hold him. But I think you can hold on to him because he's still going to get you. I bet you he still ends the season at minimum with 10 to 12 saves just because Holland's not going to be available all the time.
Yeah, I was in denial about Ottavino and the Holland situation all spring training. Yeah, I didn't want to believe it, and unfortunately it all
came
to fruition. So.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something that I find completely irrelevant. Daniel Robertson making the Rays opening day roster. This is completely due to the fact that Matt Duffy is starting the season on the disabled list. I don't think Daniel Robertson has any type of value in any format, including AL only, because he doesn't have power. He's strictly a defense-first type guy. Matt, since you're our prospect guy, do you have any other type of opinion on Daniel Robertson for 2017?
Not really. I think you nailed it pretty much. I think the only thing worth noting with him that he does do well is he does draw walks. So I guess in AL only, for the short term until Duffy comes back, you can use him as kind of your rotating infield depth guy. But yeah, I'm with you. The power kind of disappeared. He was a sexy Oakland A's prospect for a while, and
He was in the Ben Zobrist trade, and he was supposed to be one of the higher profile guys from that. Mind you, he does have more power in there. He had a hammock bone injury a couple years ago, and I think that kind of leaked into last season. But I think that Tim Beckham is going to be getting the majority of the bats against lefties, at least for the foreseeable future. And my biggest problem with this move is that Nick Franklin didn't get the opportunity to play.
Yeah, what was that about? Yeah,
did he get DFA'd?
Yeah, he got DFA'd. So
Tore it up to spring, too. Not that that matters, but
it doesn't.
Unless you're Mike Matheny, because then he'll move Piscotty down to seventh in the order because he didn't hit all spring. But hey, it is what it is. The thing with Robertson, though, man, is, like, you know, he's kind of looked at as the next Ben Zobrist, the high OBP Oakland guy. And I think more now along the lines, he's like a Greg Garcia type now. Nice little infield reserve that ain't going to kill you, can flash the glove around and draw walks, not hit for much pop, not steal many bags. Kind of boring, but useful for a real team. Not much so for fantasy.
Any other thoughts, Alex?
No, I mean, I'm pretty much on board with that. I honestly didn't know who it was before I saw the itinerary tonight. But yeah, just from his minor league profile, he kind of looks like Greg Garcia is actually a great comp for it, but just kind of like a moderately high batting average and on base percentage. Nothing extraordinary, but enough for you to be like intrigued in a deep league, but it's like a fairly anemic, like if it's like a 270, 330, whatever line, it comes with like, I don't know, like 8 to 10 home runs and like 2 stolen bases. You know, it's nothing like totally extraordinary.
He's a depth piece for AL only rosters.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the biggest takeaway is that Nick Franklin didn't make the team, and I honestly have no idea why. So,
do you find any situations, Mike, where Nick Franklin actually picks up legitimate fantasy value this year? I mean, there's a lot of teams
because
that he
can the White Sox, he'll certainly be able to
might as well pick
role,
him up. Yeah,
I don't really.
I like him. He's got a little pop, and Yeah.
And I will say this, that if Matt Duffy's injury ends up being even longer term than it has been, I think that there's serious concern at this point whether he's going to be healthy at any point. But I think that Brett Laurie, who has been linked to the Rays and obviously plays a mean guitar based on his YouTube video or whatever it was, I think that he could possibly be an option for the Rays if they decide to, you know, really wait long term on Matt Duffy, but it will kind of depend on that. I just don't understand with Nick Franklin. So in AL only leagues, especially deeper ones, I think that it's worth just keeping your eye on Franklin in case he does stay in the American League, because he did make strides this spring, especially in the strikeout to walk area, where that might be something that could trickle into, you know, better fantasy production down the road. Who knows? All right. Adrian Beltre is starting off the season with a calf strain on the disabled list. We're going to have to wait for hit 3,000 until probably, you know, the June area at some point. But Joey Gallo, who I have had a long time affliction for, is going to be starting the season with the club. He's going to, you know, end up getting pretty much full time at bats unless they're facing a lefty. But Alex, what do you feel about Joey Gallo? What's his role for fantasy teams for this season and for the short term as well?
I really don't have much to say other than quad A.
Man.
I mean, look, he, of course, he has that light tower power. He's always going to have that power. Well, I mean, probably until he's like 32. But
Russell Banya had it until he was like 40.
He still strikes out way too much. He strikes out way too much for the AAA level, let alone the major league level. He is legitimately just Miguel Sano, who strikes out a shitload, but with more strikeouts. And I am always willing to acknowledge the tools. Like, it's, you know, there's a reason why we've been talking about this kid for like 5 years. But I'm not even going to humor the idea of him being valuable to a team until I see some kind of progress.
Yeah, I think that long term, he's either going to have to just harness it a little bit against righties, because he just didn't get really the opportunity to play last year. But the year before that, when he got like 70 at bats against righties, he at least hit 240 and had four bombs. Mind you, that came with a 48% strikeout rate, but it still came with a 15% walk rate as well. So again, he can beat Adam Dunn against righties, but the problem is whether he will be able to, Beltre has been signed essentially for the next, 3 years? So he's not going to get a role at third base full time unless Beltre goes down like he has now. And I just don't think he's versatile enough to consistently play the outfield and the infield and DH and be able to let his tools, you know, correlate to success in major league games. As high as I am on Gallo, and I still have a lot of love for him, especially for on-base percentage leagues and fantasy, it's quickly starting to go downhill. I'm hoping to see something from him in the first few weeks of the season here that kind of gives him a vote of confidence for me, but I'm not really holding my breath. Matt, what do you think about Gallo?
See, he's kind of, it's a weird situation for him. He's kind of caught into that fantasy limbo of he exhausted his prospect eligibility last year in the last like 3 days of the season. So he's kind of in between that, not a prospect anymore, but kind of doesn't have a role. So he's kind of in the black hole, so to speak, because no one thinks about him or talks about him anymore. Because he's the ultimate post hype guy, I'll say that. But to sum up Joey Gallo, he hit 25 home runs last year in AAA. Very nice season, only 359 at bats and 25 homers, but the contact rate was only 58%, and that's at AAA. So everyone knows all those issues by now. I don't think it's a stretch to say this. I think this is the most important 3 weeks of Joey Gallo's career with Beltre on the DL here. Because if he proves that he can hit, I mean, he's going to stay up. And if he doesn't, he might go down, and that might be the end of him in Texas. Honestly, I believe that, because, like you said, Beltre's extension, they kind of dabbled with him playing first base last year. Kind of make room for him. I guess there's an opening there, but they guess that they signed Napoli to a decent deal. Profar's running around with spots to play. I think this is the most important 3 weeks of his life. I'm not going to bet on it, but I hope he has some success, because he's going to be an interesting player to always watch with that power, man.
All right. Hopefully Joey Gallo corrects things. Let's move on to our last kind of player for this before we go into some of our predictions for this season. And that's Delino DeShields Jr., who in spring training had 14 stolen bases and a 14-13 walk-to-strikeout ratio. hit over 320, made the ball club. I just, you know, obviously in 2015, he had a season that netted him double-digit earnings and roto value, and he's always been somebody that's had the ability to walk. Just what do we think his role could possibly be on this team other than just a guy against lefties that leads off? Alex, I'll start with you.
That is, again, a good question. I am a big fan of Delino DeShields, and I had him in 2015, and he did pay dividends. That was pretty exciting. I think he's kind of cut from the same cloth as, like, Billy Burns, which I'm not done.
Trout had a dong, by the way. Two-run dong to start of the year. Just wanted to throw that out.
Oh, poor
there.
Kendall Graveman, the opening day starter.
In the sense that he doesn't hit the ball particularly hard, and that's going to always be a problem. And I think that kind of limits his BABIP upside, which is kind of, you know, I mean, for a guy who uses his wheels and can kind of like profit off of that, it would be nicer if he could hit the ball a little harder, but I love, that he's able to take a walk, and he didn't really do it last year. Obviously last year was a down year for him. But I think he can, I think it's just a matter of time until he carves out at least some kind of like utility role. But I also think just based on the way that things go in a baseball season with injuries, I think he's going to find himself in a starting role maybe as soon as May. You know, I get, this is all speculative, but, you know, I guess fundamentally I really like him, and I think he's like a 40 steal guy.
Wow, 40 steals. I mean, I guess it depends on Profar a bit too, right? Like, if Profar just continually slumps, then why not give somebody like DeShields a chance to have at least, you know, 70% playing time, which would obviously net him at least 20. I mean, I think he stole 25 bases in 2015, if I'm not mistaken, and he did that in 425 at-bats, not even a full year. What I really like about what he did this spring and what I actually will kind of take from it is the fact that he really did well in the strikeout to walk department. That's showing that his plate skills are getting a little bit better here. He's still only 24 years old, so I do think that there's a buying opportunity, especially with everybody in fantasy talking about how speed is down nowadays, which I don't fully believe, but I think that DeShields is yet another one of those guys that you can pick up for absolutely nothing that can possibly get you 20 steals with the upside for even more if things played right. Matt, what's your thoughts on Delino DeShields?
Keep it short. I think he's got a nice avenue for playing time because I'm not sure what Profar does, and obviously other guys can get hurt and move Profar to the infield. So he's got a nice potential role there, and he's going to be a three-category, probably really nice asset, depending if you play OBP or not. If you play OBP League, he's going to be a nice source of stolen bases, obviously, like you guys discussed, and he's going to score a lot of runs because I think the Texas lineup is still obviously pretty deep top to bottom. So yeah, he's got a nice sneaky guy to have value. I think Joe Pitlesky was all over him this spring. I kept seeing him tweeting about DeShields all day, and it seemed to pay off. I mean, the sheer volume of stolen bases itself is immensely valuable, and I don't think he's a zero in other categories. Obviously, so he's definitely have a potential role here.
Joe and Alex remind me a lot of each other because they both come out with a lot of tweets that are fairly smart most of the time. So you guys are very comparable in that avenue.
And then always hyping the same guy for like weeks at a time, like my Jose Ramirez love. Yeah, I've seen
hey,
Joe talk about
guy, look at that guy.
I've seen Joe talk about DeShields for a while, and he actually kind of like reminded me of my love for him back in 2015 because I didn't really think that 2016 was kind of like a just representation of his skill set. And and I think it's important to note that Profar, I mean, part of its development, a lot of it's those injuries. I don't know if he's ever going to hit his ceiling or his once hyped potential. And it's kind of sad because we haven't really seen a consensus prospect like that for multiple years. And he's still really young. I mean, he's just as young as DeShields is, but it's quickly starting to look like he's just not going to get there. Or if he gets there, it's still going to take, you know, a good deal of kind of development time, either at the major league level or at AAA still.
There's a lot of questions about Profar from a fantasy angle, though, at the beginning, even, because while he was the number one prospect amongst pretty much every outlet you would
look at. No, he was, yeah. Definitely.
He's a
two-time number one, right?
Yeah.
He never really was the number one guy in fantasy for those years. I mean, like, that's the biggest difference when look, it was all projection with him. Somebody that could possibly turn into a 20-20 guy. Somebody that could possibly hit 300 every year. I mean, and also being in the Rangers lineup and system was a boom to his value as well. But I agree. As much as I like Profard, I'm not out on him by any means. And I do love the versatility with him. I think that DeShields Jr. is definitely more ready to be a fantasy asset now and is definitely good enough to be playing somewhat full-time in the outfield when somebody like Profar is still just continuing to develop.
Yeah, I read a tweet today that I thought it was interesting. It says people act like jerks and Profar playing all these positions was like the plan when he was developed and not even close. But hey, whatever you got
to
do,
right?
It was
supposed to be shortstop.
No, I know.
And now Elvis is there
the,
full-time.
The plan... Wasn't the plan from? I thought was he supposed to be a shortstop or a second baseman? I just remember that when he got injured, and Rougned Odor was basically just like the placeholder, and now Rougned Odor is like the cornerstone of that franchise.
Extended,
right?
I mean, Elvis Andrews got extended. Now Beltre got extended
for a while. Yeah,
he was supposed to be out, but either way, there could be value here with DeShields. Before we move on to the AL, or not just the AL stuff, but our predictions for this season, let's talk about our sponsor, Matt. We have a brand new sponsor. It's it's called Draft. On Draft, it's draft day every day. Draft is a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts just like the ones you do at the beginning of your season-long league. They last for just one night, and they take only minutes to complete. On Draft, you can play for free, or better yet, play for money. Get this, your chances of winning money on Draft are almost three times better than your chances of winning on other sites. If you're playing fantasy for money and not spending hours a day doing it, you absolutely should be playing on Draft. Download the Draft app now. Just search Draft in the App Store, and it will come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code FWFB when you download, and you will get 100% bonus up to $600 when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter the code FWFB. We will also be having some contests here on Thursday and Friday if you want to participate in those. And Matt, why don't you announce the winner of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits swag?
Yeah, man, I feel like I should get a drum roll here, but I'm not going to ask you to do that. Now,
Okay, I'm sorry.
They're good enough
Alex
for me.
Alex just comes in the back with, like, a beatbox and starts, like, going hard at it.
He was one of the prerequisites for coming on the show. He had to do that. But, no, we had a lot of good reviews, as always. We appreciate every one of them. But I particularly liked Garrett from Austin. Yeah, left a nice 5-star review. So... Garrett from Austin, if you're listening to this, message Justin, I, or Mike, or the Fantasy Benefits tag, and we can set up and get you that address and get you that t-shirt. So, thank you.
Congrats, Garrett. Definitely make sure that you get in contact with Justin Mason at Justin Mason FWFB and receive your stuff. All right. Without further ado, let's go into our next segment, and let's talk about just kind of the season preview itself and what we think might happen in terms of awards and such. So, I'll start off with you, Alex. Who do you think will be the AL and NL MVPs this year? And you can go at this any way you want. You can either just go with guys that you believe in and you don't necessarily think will win the MVP, or you can give out like legitimate MVP candidates and say the guys that you might want to win on the side, whichever way you want to go with it.
Okay. Well, obviously in the AL, it's more fun to pick someone who's not Mike Trout. so I went with Machado. And I don't have like a strong like affiliation to any particular player really, except for like one who we all know. But yeah, I think Machado has obviously played MVP caliber third base for a couple of seasons now. And with the way that the voters roll, they probably won't give it to Trout again. Donaldson's already won, so I was like, you know what, why not? Machado. Machado will do it. If the Orioles make the playoffs, it'll probably be on the back of Machado, because their pitching staff is not going to be the reason why they get there, at least the rotation.
He made another web jump today, Machado, so I'm sure you're surprised. But.
He's incredible.
He really is.
And in the NL, and I just realized I did this now, I actually made these predictions at Baseball Prospectus, but I actually chose Arenado for the NL, and basically for the same reasons. I think he'll probably put up a fight ultimately with like Rizzo or Seager or, some other kind of marquee name on one of those contending teams. But I think if the Rockies make the playoffs, and I secretly think that they will, then it's going to be because of Arenado, and he's going to get the recognition for that.
It's funny. Nobody wants to admit that they're picking the Rockies to win the West, but like,
I have them wild.
I'm picking them to win the West. I'm picking them. I don't care what anybody says. I'm picking them.
No way.
I know. It's easy to say no way, but. No, I'm rooting for them to win the West. No, they're not going to win the West, everybody. But
I want to give Alex some shit real quick. I know, like you said, one of your jobs is you study biases, right? I know this isn't what you mean. I know this isn't what you mean, but you have a love for third baseman, huh?
I actually just went on Wikipedia because I was like, I don't even remember who's won, and then I just tried to find people who haven't won yet.
I just
went with the guys who are obviously like really prominent names who are very, very unlikely to decline.
And they're very good. So yeah.
So that's what I did with like all of the awards basically. But for MVP, like I didn't want to pick Trout cause it was really easy. I didn't want to pick like, Harper cause it was really easy. Harper. Yeah. This is just like, I try to at least make it fun for myself.
So. Yeah.
I didn't pick Kershaw for Cy Young. So.
Well, you're picking Kershaw for Cy Young when we go through that, but Matt, who are your picks for this year in the MVP award for NL and AL?
Going out on a limb, but I'm going to Mike Trout, and then I wrote down Bryce Harper as well.
Of course.
So I could be boring and do that.
Who are you rooting for?
You know what? You know who actually I think has a really good shot in the NL? I mean, he's in a really nice batting order. He's leading off. In front of Eaton and Harper, I wouldn't be surprised if Trey Turner does it.
Oh, shut your mouth. Now you're off the show. And, just get off right now.
I think, watching him today, a couple of stellar defensive plays. He's going to hit 20 home runs this year, just watching the swing and watching the pop. I mean, a couple balls didn't even square up. They went to the warning track, and one bounced off the top of the wall in right center field. He's got sneaky power. I think that's real from what he translated over from last year. Obviously, playing a premium position now. Obviously, Corey Seager is going to be a guy to watch. He almost won the award last year as a rookie, so he can do it. But I think Harper has a monster year. I think Harper benefits from hitting behind Turner and Eaton all year. So it's hard to do that. And then Mike Trout's the best player in the world, so he should get it every year.
I'm going to go with Trout and Arenado, but the ones that I'm rooting for, I'm going to root for E5 in the American League. And I know that it's a long shot, but I've just always loved E5. I would love to see him win it once. Obviously, he would have to go for like a 40, 45 spot in the home run category with just the Indians continuing to be successful. But I'm going to roll with him because that's the guy. He's one of my favorite players in the league, and I'm going to root for him there. And the other one, you'll like this, Matt, is Matt Carpenter. I want him to win the NL MVP. Now, will it happen? No. I think that the Cardinals will be solid. I don't know if they're going to be good enough for him to be considered, but I think that if Carpenter goes for, 30 home runs-ish and has 100 RBIs in the three-hole of that lineup and continues to walk the way he does, maybe chips in a couple stolen bases, you could talk about him as an NL MVP candidate. Yeah. At the end of the day, both those are obviously long shots. If I'm going legitimate with it, Arenado, Trout, I'll definitely, throw somebody like Harper in the mix there, maybe Mookie Betts, based on Twitter I'd say Benintendi is there too.
Yeah, I like your E5 pick, but I just don't think a DH nowadays with the value everyone places on defense. I think it's too much value on defense, to be honest, but like in war and stuff like that. But I think with the way people do defense, and then David Ortiz didn't win the MVP last year with the season he put up as a DH, so that's an awful high mark he's got to
keep. E5 started at first today. I think he'll get a good amount of starts there. I will say another long shot, which you would figure wouldn't be. If the Diamondbacks are good, I think Goldschmidt probably will be considered there. So, I mean, that's not like a forgotten long shot, but yeah, but nobody ever talks about him. Has he won the MVP award before? Anybody know?
I don't think so.
No, he hasn't.
Harper won in 2015. Chris Bryant won last year, obviously. 2014 was Kershaw in both the Cy Young and the MVP.
That was the year Goldschmidt should have won it.
Yeah,
He got second to Kershaw that year, I think.
Yeah, he got second.
Goldie's kind of due. I mean, if anybody's due, obviously, but I think that he's due. All right, let's move on to the next possible outcomes here. So NL and AL Cy Youngs. Obviously, the NL is kind of self-explanatory. Once again, let's give our kind of runner-up there. But for the AL, don't give your runner-up. I want to legitimately know what everybody thinks for AL Cy Young because it's kind of wide open like it is every year. So I'll start with you this time, Matt.
He's in the contract year. He's coming off of Tommy John surgery a year and a half ago. He should be in good form. I pick Yu Darvish.
Oh, screw you, man.
Yu Darvish is my AL Cy Young. I think another guy to sneakily watch is Everyone's picking Chris Sale. I don't think it's going to be Chris Sale. I think another guy to watch out for is Carrasco with the Indians. I think he might put it together this year. And obviously NL, Kershaw. If I have to pick someone besides Kershaw, I'm going to go with Syndergaard if he can stay healthy. But, yeah.
How about you, Alex?
I have Carrasco at the top of my list, followed by Sale. And then I actually, just for kicks, and I don't know if it's going to work, and I don't know if it's really going to happen, but Chris Archer as my number three.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear. That's
just kind of getting
picked
frisky
Archer to
with
win
it.
Last year.
I think Yu Darvish is a great pick. And actually, that might be more realistic than Carrasco, but Carrasco has elite stuff. He just needs to stay healthy. I don't really like the whole health knock on him because he basically got dome checked last year. He got hit in the thumb. I forget if he got hit in the head or the hand.
Well, he also had that misstep on first, too, when he was.
Yeah, he tore his groin or something.
Yeah, and he hurt his groin. So maybe he is an idiot, but still. You know, I think he definitely has the goods to do it. And if he can put it together if he can reach even like 190 innings, I think he's going to give himself a very good shot at being the Cy Young.
Darvish is my guy for the AL, like I kind of alluded to earlier with Matt talking about him. If I have to go with a backup, I think Carrasco is strong and I always will root for him. But the fact that he just has all these fluke injuries happen, I won't put it next to my actual prediction. I'll go Archer as the second guy. If you guys want another name to maybe file away as a possible dark horse in the AL, let me try and find him real fast. Maybe somebody like Stroman, if you were to put it together for 200 innings, I think that he could be a guy that you could consider. But he's a long shot.
I like Aaron Sanchez better than Stroman.
Oh, I don't
personally.
I don't. I think you're crazy. For the NL, I obviously like Kershaw to win. Back up to him, I will probably go. I really want to go DeGrom. I'm not going to do it because I don't think he goes 200 innings, but I'm going to go Cueto. And I know that's a little bit off the beaten path. Syndergaard obviously is better and with raw talent. Scherzer's up there as well, Mad Bum. But I'm going to go Cueto because I always have loved him. I think that if he were to put it together, then there you go. But obviously it's going to be Kershaw, and it's not going to matter anything what we're saying right now. AL and NL Rookies of the Year. I'll start off with you this time, Alex. Who do you got?
Wait, did I get to say my Cy Young for the NL?
Oh, did you? No,
Did we even talk about it?
No, go ahead.
Everyone knows Kershaw, right?
Well, no, it's Syndergaard. Is it Syndergaard?
It's legitimately. Well, I don't think the voters are going to give it to Kershaw again, and I think Syndergaard is just—he's just too good. He's just simply too good. I don't think there's any way that he doesn't win it this year. I mean, I think Kershaw is still the best pitcher in the game, but I think the voters, between him and Trout, I think the voters, they get fatigued with the same guys being so good all the time. And it's just, that's a bias for you, Matt. I think they just try to look for a fresh face in the landscape. And it's not like the voters of, the late 90s or early 2000s when Randy Johnson's winning three or four in a row. I think Kershaw will probably get like second again. And I think Syndergaard is going to be the one who upends him this year.
I can definitely get on board. But if I'm making a legit pick, then yeah, I think Syndergaard. I'm just talking about who I'm rooting
for. Syndergaard is my second choice behind Kershaw.
Yeah. Okay, we can move on. Sorry, I just got excited.
No, it's all good. Why don't you talk about your AL and NL Rookies of the Year?
Well, okay, so I submitted this to Baseball Prospectus before Dusty made an official announcement, but I said Kota Glover would win NL Rookie of the Year. But Yeah, I'm going to stick to it. No, if I had to pick a real one, because that was like one of those ones that's like, look, I'm just going to, a lot of these things are unpredictable. Michael Fulmer won last year in the AL. No one saw that coming. So I was like, look, Kota could probably win if he does a really good job as a closer. That's not happening anymore. But I think Gazelman could do it. If he pitches effectively and stays in the rotation, he could just be another one of the incredible Mets pitchers in that rotation. Indistinguishable from the rest.
I like him a lot for the NL. I actually, he's my pick. But who do you like for the AL, other than the obvious?
I think Benintendi is going to do it. And I think people conflate. We kind of had this discussion about 10 minutes ago with Profar, but there's guys who are toolsy and it hasn't come together and it's all projection. And then there are guys who are toolsy and it's completely legit. And I haven't seen Benintendi's profile since basically Mookie Betts, a few years ago when he, like, right before he debuted. Like, that's basically, like, the minor league profile that we're looking at. So he legitimately has the goods to be already like probably one of the better ball players in the American League or in all of baseball. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I, as much as I don't want to admit it,
you love him.
Mike loves Antonio. I don't know if you know this about me, Alex, and I probably mentioned on every single show that I'm on, but I'm a massive Rays fan, and I can't stand the Red Sox.
Oh, okay.
I loathe them.
I understand.
So
got it.
I hate Benintendi, but damn it, do I respect him. Damn it, do I respect him. Matt, go to your guys.
I'm going completely chalk. I went Benintendi and Dansby Swanson. But one name, I think the words are pretty much already etched in stone, to be honest with you. But I think one name to watch in the National League is Andrew Tolles. I think he's leading off of that team against righties. He still has his rookie eligibility, barely. And I think he's proven last year he can hit righties. He's unbelievable against right-handed pitching. So, yeah, I go Andrew Tolles as a dark horse. And then, obviously, in the American League, obviously, like I said, I picked Benintendi. I had a dark horse, and I can't remember who it was.
Luke Weaver.
No. No, I'll circle back if I can find it, but I went Benintendi and Dansby.
I'm going Benintendi and Gesellman, and Dansby's obviously up there. I think that if I had to pick, like, with a gun to my head, that I would go Dansby, but I'm rooting for Gesellman because I like him a lot. I think Haniger, though, is somebody I'm really rooting for.
That's my dark horse, Mitch Haniger. That's who it was.
He's my number two as well.
Yeah. I really like Haniger, so I got to see him a bit today. I think that he has the goods, so we'll see what happens.
I love
obviously,
the scene, the leg kick, man.
Yeah, obviously Benintendi hit a 3-run shot today, so he's already done. He is they already have it, the award already etched in and everything, like you already mentioned, Matt, it's done with, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. You know who might be a dark horse?
Is it
Alex Bregman? No, it's Alex Bregman, who is kind of like cut from the same cloth as Benintendi, who's like completely major league ready, but now he's just overshadowed by the other guy.
I did not
guy.
Even think about it. Is he rookie eligible still?
No, that's the problem.
Oh, is he not rookie? Okay. That's why I didn't think about him.
I was looking at it earlier. I didn't think he was rookie eligible, but if he is.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I just had that thought right now, so that's why. That's what a lack of research will do to you. So
50 at-bats over the limit.
I mean, obviously, people that can challenge in the AL is if Yoan Moncada comes up early, and he could possibly challenge the AL MVP or Rookie of the Year if things were to break right for him. Bradley Zimmer, if he were to come up early, he's a candidate as well. I just don't think I don't think either of them are polished enough and in a good enough lineup, really, to be able to take on Andrew Benintendi in the Rookie of the Year award for this year. But I think that Dansby or Gesellman are probably the only candidates in the NL, though. I don't know about Tolles. I don't think he has enough to bring to the table at the end of the season. I don't think there's really any other candidates at this point, right? Like, in the NL?
There's always somebody that comes out of nowhere.
I mean, I guess,
but,
like, Roman Quick could come up and steal 30, but I don't think anybody's, like, really counting on that. Milwaukee could bring up Brinson. I don't think that will happen, though, like, early enough for maybe Tyler Beedie. If Tyler Beedie were to come up early for the Giants and get himself, like, 25 starts of quality ball, then we maybe could be seeing somebody like him win the Rookie of the Year for the NL. Or not, then. All right, geez.
No, I mean, that ballpark is... That ballpark is pretty safe for him, so, yeah, I don't mind it.
AL and NL worst teams. I will start with you, Alex.
AL, I'm actually going to – well, so I think it's – realistically, it's Chicago in the AL. But I picked Minnesota because they're also not very good. and I think they're like, comparably bad. And you can, like, really, like, nitpick as, like, where they're weak, but really their entire teams are weak. I think there's, like, some bright spots in the White Sox offense, but only from, like, a fantasy perspective. Like, in a real-world perspective, they're a team that, like, refuses to take walks. And the Twins have a couple of guys who are really interesting, and then an aging core, and mostly just, like, busted prospects and some, you know, filler guys. But I'm gonna go Minnesota. That's gonna be, if that's considered bold, then I'm gonna go bold and say Minnesota.
Well, it's definitely an argument to say that White Sox, like, infield defense isn't as bad as people think it is. You know, I mean, like, Todd Frazier isn't, like, a Gold Glover out there, but he's solid. Tim Anderson is above average defensively. I don't know who they're playing at second base at this point.
Tyler Saladino.
But he's fine, you know. And then you have Abreu at first, who's whatever. I mean, I bet he's league average over there. So, I mean, like, infield-wise, their defense isn't terrible. Outfield-wise, they might have some problems. But go ahead, Alex.
No, that's, I mean, that was Saladino. I'm actually a little bit, I'm interested in Saladino, and I wrote about him at FanGraphs.
Crushed a guy a month and a half ago doing a draft. I believe he was from CBS too, which probably isn't good for me to do, but he took Tyler Saladino for like $2 in an auction. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, what? I have no idea what you're doing right now. And he was like, I'm a White Sox fan. Don't worry about it. And now, like, looking back on it, it's really not that bad of a move. Like, he's 100% going to do $2 worth of – he's like a double-digit steal, and he's almost like a light Dansby Swanson a bit, but you don't have to pay anything for him. And
yeah, he could legit be good for, like, 10 homers, 15 steals, like a .260 batting average. He'd be like a fringe starter even in a mixed league. He just, like, doesn't walk. He's not particularly sexy, but if he holds on to the job all year, and he might, because the White Sox don't – they inherently don't have an incentive
to promote
Moncada immediately. Everyone assumes it's going to happen, but it seems like they're at a point where they're like developing talent and acquiring talent really smartly. And I think that they might not even bring up Moncada until like September, which would give
Saladino. I don't think they should. Yeah.
I don't think they should either. And that would give Saladino like 500 plate appearances. He would very likely reach double digits, home runs and steals, probably like .260 batting average, whatever. But like, that's like, yeah, it's like sneaky good, even in like a 12-team league.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree.
So, Dino's also got that shortstop, third base, and second base eligibility, I believe, if you didn't mention that either. I mean, that helps. I don't know if you mentioned that.
Basically, what I'm saying is I shouldn't have shit on the guy's pick, because it actually isn't that bad.
Hey, at least you owned up to it. And I'm glad someone else believes the same way. We've been talking about that with Moncada all year. I don't think he comes up before September, because, I mean, like, his at-bats last year in Boston came in September, which was important. Count toward his free agent service time. So as far as the White Sox are concerned, he's at all zeros for them. So I mean, when he comes up, and then that'll really start his clock, unless they do that again. So yeah, no incentive. I agree with that.
Jokes on us. Moncada gets called up in 3 days.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
but I'm actually going with Minnesota as well. I had them written down as my worst team.
Oh, sweet.
So I'm with you. And then, obviously, I mean, this is even before watching today's monstrosity, but San Diego, man. I think it's hands down. I think they lose over 110 games. Is that a bold prediction?
Not really.
I think that's with over 110. It's terrible.
Is that yours, too, Alex, for the NL, San Diego?
Yeah, it is. But, like, so Cincinnati is interesting, too, in that they will also be really bad. Like, that rotation is horrendous. And that, well, the bullpen's decent. But like, man, the first five innings of every game are going to be just an awful experience for everyone.
The
involved.
Argument there too. I mean, I realize the West is good enough to really just trounce on San Diego all year long. So I don't think it's any question that San Diego is going to be more than likely the worst team record wise. But Cincinnati could be a close second, just because they have to face the Cubs, the Cardinals, and, you know, Pittsburgh's obviously always in the mix too. I mean, they legitimately,
the Brewers can beat up bad pitching with that offense. So
yeah, I think the Brewers are like sneaky good too. Yeah, I mean, they're obviously not
good,
very
offensively,
good,
but. Offensively, I think that they can hang with anybody, you know. So
there
you go. I think that, yeah, I think it's pretty self-explanatory there. There's really nobody in the East other than like the Phillies and the Marlins that you could possibly make a case for. But I just, you know, I feel like it's going to be San Diego no matter what, and maybe Cincinnati. In the AL side, I agree about Minnesota and the White Sox. If I had to pick one, I would go White Sox, because I think that Minnesota is a little bit better than you guys are giving. If Sano and Buxton have full seasons in the majors, I think that they do well. If they don't,
what if they trade Dozier?
Yeah, it might not happen. The fact that they were reluctant to do it last year,
in the
offseason, I mean, for the Dodgers, and I think from what I've seen, the Dodgers were presenting them with a really good package. I don't think that they're going to be trading them until they absolutely need to, and you know that might be in a few months.
I just don't think Sano and Buxton are that good yet.
That's what I meant to talk to you about. Sano and Chris Davis, you and I need to make a bet on that, because, like, because I'm of the belief that Sano is going to end up hitting over 35 home runs this year. And while, you know, I remember like a month and a half or 2 months ago, you and Ryan Bloomfield were talking about this, and I kind of barged in and was like, no, Sano, you know, you two were all on the Chris Davis bandwagon with it. And I was
talking,
like,
about K-Riss Davis, right?
Oakland? Yeah, K-Riss,
just
yeah.
For the record.
And I
yeah,
just kind
okay.
of barged in on the conversation. I was like, Sano, no, you guys can't, you know, say anything bad about him. So I do want to put some type of like wager down on this. You know, I already did this with Joe Pitlesky with the whole Eric Hosmer and Brandon Belt thing. So I don't mind doing this as well with the, you know, Miguel Sano, K-Riss Davis, you know, I guess comparable stats line, if you want to do that as well. I mean, maybe we can figure it out off air, but.
Sure. Yeah. We'll negotiate. We'll negotiate.
Yeah. We can definitely negotiate.
I wanted to say one last thing about the Padres is that I do like the potential of that outfield. I think they're all a little bit underrated. I think I'm a huge Alex Dickerson fan. For fantasy purposes, obviously he's great, and he could be the full time left fielder for all we know. I mean, I don't know. I think Dickerson's going to displace someone when he comes back because he is legitimately one of the better hitters on that team.
I agree.
I don't know if he displaces Jankowski, and if he gets. Even if he gets like 500 plate appearances, he could legitimately steal 40 bases. That guy just runs wild. He has an anemic bat. He's basically just kind of like Billy Hamilton light, I guess.
Yeah, that's another guy we didn't mention for the NL MVP or NL Rookie of the Year. I'm sorry, is Mark O. He could conceivably win it. I don't think he will, but
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a defensible pick. I think.
Well, some of it with the rookie of the year stuff is just getting the playing time, which is why Dansby is such a safe pick. Marco will likely be the full time center fielder there. I mean, he faced What I loved about him facing Kershaw, not to go off on another tangent here, but he just was very aggressive with it. Instead of waiting for Kershaw to throw
that's
the
what he does.
Down, he just was really aggressive and he tried to hit the first pitch and it went foul, but if it was fair, it would have borderline been a home run. I think, you know, I like that about him. So
yeah, he's aggressive in the zone. He doesn't walk very much, and I think that's good for his game. But
yeah.
I think the thing with San Diego, man, the San Diego's got a weird roster, man. They carried three Rule 5 guys, and they have a relief pitcher catcher hybrid. So like, I think they're easy to lock for last place.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't even realize that Alex Dickerson last year only struck out 17% of the time in 253 actual at-bats, 10-5 in the home run stolen base department. I like the call.
I
knew he was good, but I
think
he was that good.
I think he's going to be like a poor man's Kyle Seager and maybe even become a new Kyle Seager. I think he's got he's like a 2010 guy with like a pretty good batting average.
I absolutely agree.
He's a high draft pick, too. He's got the pedigree. Third-round pick.
It was just a matter of getting the contact issues under control, and he did that last year. He did that in the minors, and he brought it over to the major league level. I think it's for real. I think we're gonna find out if it's for real, but it looks legit. So
needs to get those contract issues in order. All right, let's let's move on to the ALNL World Series champions. I'll go back to Matt this time.
To make it short and sweet, World Series from last year, but the other team wins.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. How about you? I'm assuming you agree with this, Alex.
Yeah, I do. I do. I've been on the Indians bandwagon ever since, basically since Kluber kind of like came to prominence at the end of 2013. That wasn't really even really prominence at the end of 2013, but that's like when I started really paying attention to the Indians. That's when I like started paying attention to Jose Ramirez. So they've been my team for a couple of years now. So I would like to see them win and get vengeance on the Cubs or whoever they face. Maybe the Dodgers. I don't care, but I want the Indians to win.
Yeah, I just don't think the Dodgers can take down the Cubs, but I guess there's a possibility.
Almost did last year.
They did. They did almost do it last year. And Kershaw, I think, really proved doubters wrong last year in the playoffs, finally just kind of, you know, coming
into form. Yeah, didn't have to play St. Louis, so that's probably why. I mean.
Oh, wow. Okay. If I have to choose an AL team that isn't the Rays, I think Cleveland's obviously a strong contender. I want to go Houston, though. I really am rooting for Houston to...
One more year away.
They might be, and they honestly could be, but... As long as, if Springer stays healthy, And I think Correa, I didn't mention him in AL MVP, but he could very well win that sucker. I think Correa is...
Dong today, monster home run.
Yeah, Correa, at least in the WBC, just is showing a different type of swagger to him that I haven't seen from him yet. And, you know, for me to proclaim him being a possible MVP candidate isn't a long shot by any means. So I probably should have said him. But I think that if Correa puts up the type of year that I think he could and they get some reasonable durability out of their team, then they could definitely be in the thick of things. They obviously have the farm system to upgrade anything that they want at any time. So I think Houston's definitely a dark horse to make the World Series, and they have the bullpen to do it as well. I think that they're in a pretty good spot if Cleveland doesn't, you know, win it, or if the Rays don't come out of nowhere. Come on, guys, give the Rays some love.
I don't think the Rays get last this year in the AL.
Oh, I don't either. I think it's the Yankees.
Yeah, I think it's the AU's too. I think they're kind of done.
I think Baltimore does, to be honest. Baltimore's mine.
I don't think Toronto's all that either, to be honest.
I have Toronto winning the division. I'm the only one on this list. Yeah, I got Toronto winning. Their pitching staff is underrated, man. Sanchez and Stroman and then Happ and Estrada always get it done. And Liriano, they can turn Liriano into something in the five spot.
I like the rotation from a fantasy perspective, but they give up a ton of home runs to be sitting there proclaiming that they're great.
Their dark horse for me to go get somebody like Jose Quintana because they got the prospects too. So
they kind of do. I don't know. They don't have the pitching prospects to give up to do that. I think that they're looking for pitching. Either way, from the NL side, other than the Cubs, I think that the teams that can make a meaningful run at it is one of the NL East guys. So either Washington or the Mets could definitely be there at the end if the Cubs kind of falter a bit. I think Washington at some point it has to happen. You know, at some point they have to get over that barrier. We'll see if it's this year, but I think it's going to be the Cubs, and that's pretty much it. So, all right, let's wrap this sucker up. Alex, once again, why don't you tell the listeners where you can be reached and what you're up to nowadays, where they can find your work, etc.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Dolph Haldagen. I'll spell it. I'll spell it this time.
Yeah,
spell it's D-O-L-P-H. Haldhagen. And yes, I do regret making that my Twitter handle. Thank you for asking. You can find me at Rotographs. You can find me at Baseball Prospectus, occasionally at Rotoballer. I've been kind of doing like more research-based stuff in the off season, but I'll end up doing player profiles kind of slants during the season, which is usually what tickles my fancy, trying to figure out, like I said, things that are interesting angles on certain guys and kind of trying to find the market inefficiencies. That's my jam. So you'll see me once a week at those avenues.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you on again. I'm thank you very much for coming on. We really like you here. I actually specifically asked for you to come on to Justin. So you're one of my favorite analysts out there, even though you're not one of the more popular based on your Twitter followers. I think that you are every bit as quality, and I'm not mean that as a joke. I was just, you know, I'm being honest.
No, it's great. I appreciate it. Seconded. Twitter's not everything. So.
Yeah. Matt, why don't you give out all of your info, where you can be reached, what you're up to, et cetera.
MDTompFWFB on Twitter. Just hit me up. Watching baseball.
You can catch me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check out the Prospect Show. You're on that too, Matt, with me, Matt, and Andy.
Oh, yeah. On Thursdays. Forgot about that.
Yep. You can also read all my stuff on baseball HQ for this season. I'm doing the daily matchups column there. I also did a DFS article the other day for friendswithfantasybenefits.com. I will try and put out one of those a week, hopefully, if I have time. I did just start a new job that's gonna literally kill me physically, so we'll see if I can do it. But for Matt, Alex, and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck this baseball season. Every night.